Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining me for at 10:30 on a Friday, last day of the conference. Looks like most of you look like how I feel. So I assume a lot of you guys had a late night last night. Anyone? Everyone? Yeah. So my name's John Sheehan. I'm an architect on the Windows team, and I focus primarily on the Windows app model. And a bunch of other miscellaneous stuff like web apps and everything. But really, my sort of main focus is the Windows 8 app model and, you know, what we build in the system so that you have great apps. And today, we're going to be talking about greed. Ah, there it goes. At least that should have been the title of this talk, although I guess it's something about delighting users. I don't know. But seriously, we're going to talk about greed. Greed's a good thing. And greed will motivate you to build great apps. And while this talk says from the moment they click buy, in reality, you probably from the moment that they click try. Because usually before you're going to get money from your user, they're going to try your app out first. And most users are going to form an opinion about your app in the first few minutes. And if that's not a good experience, then it's not likely that you're going to get money from them. And so we're going to talk a bit about, this is doing great, we're going to talk about that first experience that the user gets with your app. From the moment they're up on the store and they're looking at it and decide that your app's probably interesting and they might want to give it a try, all the way down till they start using it and, you know, what they think about your app and was it a good experience? And do they think it's going to continue to be a good experience? Or was it kind of a clunky experience, and therefore it's probably not that high quality of an app, and they're going to, you know, not use it? And unfortunately for you, you may put a ton of time into, you know, tons of features in your app, and you might do a really good job at, you know, the ongoing experience with your app. But if you don't focus on that first experience, you may lose the users. They may go and use a competitive app instead of your app just because that experience didn't feel that great. So we're going to talk about a few different areas of that, and we're going to talk about what you can do to make those users have a great experience and feel like your app is high quality and they like using it. There's basically three areas. We're going to break this up into three areas. Some of them is interesting because the first two, none of your code's running yet. So you literally, all that code that you wrote, none of it is running yet. And yet, the users are already forming an opinion on your application. And so we'll talk about things that you can do to get it working and get it, you know, get that user that great experience even before your code starts running. All right, so let's begin. The first one sounds pretty simple. It's download quickly. And in Windows 8, there really wasn't a lot you could do other than maybe write tighter code or something in order to affect the download, right? You built your app, you put all the, you know, put all the big images in there, and you localized it to as many languages as you wanted to. But at that point, you were out of the equation. There was nothing that you could do to really improve the experience. We've done a lot of work in the platform in 8.1 to give you the ability to really improve this experience for users, and in some cases, drastically improve the experience for users. And the way that you do it is by downloading by reducing your download size. Now, what I didn't say was make your app smaller, right? Your app will be the same size as it was in Windows 8, but there's an opportunity now for you to actually reduce the amount of things that are brought from the cloud down to the device. And by doing that, you'll really make that experience snappier. So let's talk a bit. How do we do it? There's basically two new features that we added in the OS that enable you to reduce your download size and therefore improve the experience. The first one is takes no real work on your part, but it does require you to be smart, and we'll talk a bit about what that means. And then the other one, actually, there's a bit of work you need to do, but it's mostly taken care of by the tools. And with these first two things, you'll be able to, in some cases, drastically reduce your download size. So let's talk about it. So when you think of your app It's up in the cloud, right? The Windows Store has your bits sitting in the cloud. But your app is really made up of a whole bunch of different things. You obviously have your code, right? You may also have some libraries that you're using. Like, if, for example, in this example, if you're a game, you're probably using some kind of game engine. You probably didn't build your game from scratch. If you did, congratulations, you're a ninja developer. Probably not the smartest thing you could have done. You probably should have spent your time actually working on your game instead of building an engine. But most people will use some kind of game engine. You have tons of different resources for your, you know, for your app. You know, Windows 8 apps are visually pleasing. They're beautiful. And that's expensive, right? So having tons of high-resolution images that look beautiful and make the app feel polished also just increases the size of, you know, of your app. And when you start looking at these, like, high-res screens that are coming out now, like, all of you are actually, sorry, you Microsoft people, all of you non-Microsoft people, you were given Surface Pro, and you were given this 8-inch device. These devices actually have very high-resolution screens. And if you want your app to look beautiful on that screen, and also on a non-high-res screen, you're expected to create multiple versions of your images and all your resources so that they look nice on all the different screens. Now, of course, on any one device, you're probably, the user's only going to use one of those images, but you still have to package all those up. So you have all these images in your app. And then if you're targeting multiple markets, you've probably localized your app. I mean, we have apps in the store, we've looked at the data, that target over 100 languages. Over 100, think about that. Any one user is going to speak usually one language, sometimes two, but our data says most users prefer a single language. And yet in Windows 8, we would download all 100 plus languages just so that the user could have their one. So this is kind of the view of your app in the cloud. And in Windows 8, normally we would have downloaded everything for that app, right? Everything. But in this example here, the user happens to be using a non-high DPI screen. They happen to speak French, so they do, you know, they do need the French resources for your app. But they don't need the high DPI resources. And in 8.1, that means we just won't go fetch them. The system will look at and say, okay, this is the screen resolution they have, this is the language that they speak. It will just go and only download the pieces of the app that are really important for this particular user and that they'll use. And with that, you can save significant amounts of download size and really speed it up. If your app happens to be a game, that can be a significant amount of your download size. We've seen games that actually more than half of the download is not used by any, like any one individual machine wouldn't use half of the stuff that's downloaded. So you could literally cut it in half in some cases. So this is the first feature that we did, the ability to just pull down the things that are needed. And that alone can get you significant savings. But there's something else that we did as well. So in this example here, we're looking at some Microsoft games. So we have, I think it's Solitaire, can't see. But they also ship lots of games. And when they ship those games, there turns out that there's a lot of shared code in there, right? So they have a single gaming engine that they use across all their different games. And in Windows 8, we would download that thing every time. So that game engine, which is, you know, is a good portion of the code that makes up that app, we'd download it. And then when you got the second game, we'd download it again. And the third one, we'd download it again. We would keep downloading it. And even worse, at runtime, they would get loaded into memory separately, so they would take up, you know, you wouldn't get any of the, you know, traditional shared memory that you get from Windows when you have, like, common DLLs. In 8.1, we change that. When we go to do a download, we look across all the apps on the system, and we figure out if we already have that identical file. And if we do, we know that we don't need to download it. Instead, we download all the other stuff, and then we just create a hard link. And that hard link says, yes, it looks like the file's in two places on disk, but those are the same file. There's really one. And all this is managed under the covers by Windows, and you don't really have to do anything. It just works. So if you think about common libraries out there, so if you think about, like, SQLite is a good example. Most people, if they want a SQL database, they'll choose SQLite. There's a version that targets Windows 8 apps. It's a really, really high quality piece of software. Lots of people go and get it. If you go and get the SQLite DLL and put it in your package, chances are, by the time the user goes to get your app, they probably already have that thing on disk. And if they do, that's one less thing that we actually have to bring down for them to get running. So what do you have to do? I said it's almost free, right? It's this close to being free, literally. Like, if you use the system as intended, the tooling will take care of the rest. It'll automatically do all this work for you. And really, the only thing that we ask of you is to use our resource management system. So how many of you have actually looked at the resource management system that we have in Windows 8? It's kind of what I figured. It's like one person. You almost don't notice it. For most developers, you don't really have to do much of anything. You build your app. As long as you take things like your string resources and put them into a string table, the system takes care of the rest. Right? One really nice thing about this, by the way, is that let's say you only speak one language, like I do. Right? I just speak English. I don't speak any other languages. So if I try to translate it into some other language, I would probably do a pretty horrible job. I would probably end up offending someone, actually. So with our resource management system, you can actually build your app. As long as you're smart about it and put things in the string table, you can actually pay someone else. You can just hand them your package, and they will go and translate it for you and give you back the results. If you do this, you're all set. At that point, when you build the package to go submit it to the store, we will automatically take and we'll break it up from that one monolithic APX file that we had in Windows 8 into a bunch of APX files, one for your main code, one for each one of the languages that you translate into, one for each one of the screen resolutions that you target. And particularly for DX games, one really cool thing we do is, in DirectX, we have three different cards that we support, three different versions. There's version 9 of DirectX, version 10, and version 11. And one of the things that differs is the DirectX resources, like textures, right? They have different formats for each one. And for a game, that's actually a huge part of the payload of the game. And so if you want your game to look great on, you know, a DX9 device like the Surface RT and also a DX11 device like these new laptops that have really nice graphics cards, you'll actually have three copies of your game effectively all in the same package. With 8.1, the tooling can see that you have those three different sets of resources, and it'll split it up for you. And so my device happens to have a DX11 card. And so when I go to install your game, I won't get DX9 stuff, I won't get DX10 stuff, I'll just get the DX11 stuff. And so therefore, there could be hundreds of megabytes that I just don't download. And by doing this, I really get that great experience. Like I hit try, because I haven't bought your app yet. But I hit try, it comes down quickly, I'm up and running, and, you know, again, it comes back to greed. You can make good money doing that. There we go. What happens on the client side? Actually, so I talked about the system kind of does it, but you should really understand under the covers what we're doing. So we have this thing called applicability, right? So every time now when we go to install an app, we look at it. And if it's one of these new 8.1, what we call bundles, which is a group of APX files all packaged up, we look at it and say, okay, what do we really need? You know, if you're on my machine, I don't speak French. So in our example with the games, the system would say, okay, doesn't need French, only needs English. It would look at my graphics card and say, oh, he has a DX11 graphics card, so I don't need to go and get the DX9 and DX10 resources. And it would look at the resolution of my screen and say, okay, this is the resolution of the screen that he has. I don't need any of that other stuff. And it will go through and selectively just pick out the pieces that are needed and just pull those down. So that is nice and it's automatic. And it's mostly transparent to users. There's actually one case where the users could notice something, and that is if they change their hardware or change their language configuration. So let's say tomorrow I magically learn French. Like overnight, I took a great, really, really great French course, didn't know it today, now I know it tomorrow. And I go into my system and I say, hey, now I actually like French and I want to make sure that I get French versions of my apps. Well, for any new apps, obviously, we'll also pull down French. But what about all the apps that I already have? If I got your app yesterday, and you had already translated into French, but I didn't tell the system I spoke French at that time, then what's going to happen? And what happens is we actually treat it the same way that we treat an app update. So really, that scenario is no different than if I already spoke French, but you hadn't translated into French yet, and you shipped a French update later. So the next time that we go and install updates, we'll recheck the applicability for every single app, and this time we'll notice, oh, this user now likes French, and this app is translated into French, and so it'll be like an app update, and it'll automatically pull down. In reality, changing languages, learning a new language overnight, is not a particularly common thing to happen. But something that is more common is you might go and buy a new monitor, right? So right now, how many people have literally a freestanding, not laptop, freestanding touchscreen monitor? One person. I don't, actually. I work at Microsoft. We do touch everything. I don't have a touch freestanding monitor. But they're starting to come out. And when those things come out, they're starting to go very high DPI as well. And so people going out and buying new hardware, you know, that's going to be happening a lot over the next couple of years. And when they plug in that new monitor, now they'll probably have this high-resolution screen, and now those high-resolution resources that we didn't download before, now we'll need to download those. And when we do, again, we'll treat it just like an update. The next time that we do a check for updates, we'll see that they now have a high-resolution screen. We'll say, great. We'll go and get the high-resolution resources. But that's probably not going to happen until the next night. What can the user do in the meantime? If the user wants, after they plug in that high-resolution monitor, they can actually just go and hit check for updates and force update check to happen right now. And if, you know, if they do that, then they'll go ahead and get those resources right away. In a matter of minutes, your game or your app will look great on that high-resolution screen instead of using the lower resolution resources. So let's talk a little bit about what it can save. There's actually two things that it can save. The first is obviously download size and disk space. But there's actually another thing that's really important that matters for performance too, which is file count. It's non-obvious. People always say, you know, even inside of Microsoft, when we tell people, hey, we noticed your app has tons of files. And we went and looked at it, and they're really not necessary. It's sort of gratuitous. The first thing that people say normally is, so what? It's just some extra files. Who cares? But it actually affects your user. If you have tons of files, think about that like virus scan that runs at night. There's overhead. Like if you had 100,000 zero-length files, well, disk space-wise, it's almost nothing, right? But those 100,000 files will take forever to get through for a virus scanner because they'll have to go get the file, they'll open it up, they'll check the size. Oh, it's zero, I don't need to scan it. But all that work that they do up front, there's a big overhead to that. And so when we start looking at all this work that we did, we see that we can significantly reduce the size on disk and the number of files. And this is actual data that we took just from some Microsoft apps that we sort of ship in box and we use day to day. And most of these apps, they're not DX games, so they're not the kind of apps that have the huge wins. A lot of them aren't localized into that many languages. Most of them do have the higher resolution images. But even just these like very kind of run-of-the-mill day-to-day apps, we still saw significant improvements. We saw, you know, literally, I think it was 70 or 80 megs of disk space that was immediately freed up. And we're only talking a handful of apps, right? I don't know about you, but on my device, I have over 100 apps installed. And the difference between, you know, I think I have probably 6 or 7 gigs of apps. I could probably free up a couple of gigs of space if all those developers just went off and used this new feature in N1. In 8.1, sorry. So just to recap, because this was only one of the topics we're going to talk about, the things that you can do are basically, for those like libraries like SQLite or gaming engines, usually they're open source, right? So you get the source code. If you wanted to, you could recompile them. And I've actually seen lots of people do that, where they add it into their Visual Studio project, they set it up as a library, and they keep recompiling the code. If you do that, I guarantee that you're going to create a unique file, because there's going to be at least one or one zero that's different somewhere in that file when you recompile it. And the moment that you've changed the file, it's now your own. You'll never benefit from all the other people that are using that same library. So when you go and get these great third-party libraries, make sure you just use the one that they distribute, and then you'll end up sharing with all the other people that use that library. And the other thing is, make sure that you use our resource management system. Make sure that you don't go off and try to like just hard code strings throughout your app, but get it ready to be world ready so that you can, you know, translate in other languages. And if you do that, like, we'll take care of the rest. All right, so the next topic we're going to talk about is, so now the user has finally downloaded your app. Again, none of your code is run. We're still before the first launch, so none of your code is run yet in this scenario either. But we're going to talk about live tiles. You know, live tiles are really one of the big things that make the start menu really useful. Sorry, start screen. This is what a dead screen looks like. If you look up here, you'll see that you just see a bunch of random icons. There's no data. It's not interesting to look at. It's just some big tiles that don't really tell you anything. This is what a screen that's alive looks like, right? You get data. It's rich. You get to see that there's news stories that you might be interested in, that there might be stock information that you're interested in. In Windows 8, your tiles can never go live until after they've launched your app. So you're literally in one of those situations where your tile looks dead, your app looks dead, until some point after the user launches it. And then after they launch it, then it can look alive and beautiful. This was actually a big complaint from lots of users. We got lots of feedback that they'd go and install all these apps, and then the screen was dead, and they had to go and sit there and individually launch each one, and then it would light up. We definitely got feedback from you, the developers, telling us that you didn't like the fact that you had this great feature and all this great data, and you put work into it, and there were lots of users that, you know, it just didn't get the benefit. So what we've done is we've added a new way for you to actually describe in your manifest that you have a live tile, and you want it lit up, and you want it running now, even before your app's launched. And so I'm going to give you a demo of this and show you how easy it is. So switch over to my laptop for a second. It's obviously locked. Okay. So what I have here is I have a cloud service that I'm using for my live tile. And I have the data here, and well, that's somewhat depressing. Let's see if maybe the news is better than meth flooding the US border crossing. Nope. Still flooding the, all right. Anyway, so I have a news app, and my news app has a live tile. And this is basically the cloud service that I use for my live tile. You can see I do things like I have different size tiles. I have different images for each one so that it fits into the right, whether it's a small tile or a big tile. And one other interesting thing that you'll see here is that actually it's English. So a lot of these services have different backends and different URLs for each one of their languages. And when we were doing this, we figured out that what the most common thing that developers did to customize their live tile is figure out what language the user spoke and made sure they sent that to their cloud service so that it could generate the right, create the right tiles. And not only that, larger developers tend to have sites all over the world. And even if you're not a large developer, if you're using a CDN, the CDNs have features where they can say, hey, you know what? In this region, we know these are the languages that are common, so we'll co-locate that code right near where the people actually are, and therefore they'll get better performance and better experience. And so since none of your code's running, though, you can't actually go off and customize it like this. So let me show you what we've done to enable you to get this kind of functionality. When you tell us what the URL is for your live tile, we allow you to specify where you want us to fill in the language tag. So in my example, I actually have it in two places. I have it both in the server that I hit and also in the which area of my website I go to get the live tile. And by taking this, literally all I have to do to get this working is I go over to Visual Studio, and in 8.1 and in Visual Studio 2013, we have this new section now called Tile Update. And what you can do here, you can configure the system and say, this is the frequency that I want the update to happen, and this is where I want you to go to get the new tile. And so let's see, I'll set mine to a half hour. Well, first of all, let me first show you what my tile looks like when it's dead. So this is what my tile looks like right now. It's this one right here. It says live news, this blue one right here. So in 8, when people installed my app, that's all they would get. They would just get this dead tile, you know, and it would take up a bunch of screen real estate, and they wouldn't get any value out of it. But now, if I go in and I specify this, and I tell them that I want to use this URL and save it, now I can go and deploy this. All right, and it's deploying. It's deployed. And now if the network cooperates, in a second we should see that tile. Even though I haven't launched the app, I haven't actually done anything, the tile should go live, and I think the network's not cooperating with me. Come on, network. You can do it. Okay? As always, let me go back and see if it's working now. All right, seems to be working. Oh, there it went. It just took a second. So now, this is my live tile. It's much nicer, right? There's content on there. There's visual images on there. It's pleasing. You know, that's an interesting app. And at this point now, my app's useful, even though none of my code is run yet. The user is already starting to get information. They can take a glance and see what news stories are happening right now. It will invite them to come and launch my app and actually use it. And, you know, and by doing that, now they can go and say, okay, great, and now if they go and launch the app, now they'll see the news stories that were just listed in the live tile. So that's our new live tile feature. And we really encourage you to use it because most people think of the pattern as this. They think that a user goes to the store, is really excited about your one app, installs it, and then immediately goes launch it. That seems like the common pattern. But what we actually see from the store is that people go and install lots of apps. And there are tons of apps that actually don't get launched. Like the user goes in, sees the page, maybe they're looking for a news app, they see a few recommendations, they hit install on a few, and they may only go and launch half of them. And so if you really want to get users to not just hit install, but also to launch your app and experience it and see what great work you did, taking advantage of this feature will really get you there. There we go. And so, you know, think about what kind of information that you can put in that live tile to make it interesting. Now, by the way, obviously, when that happens, you still don't know who the user is. So you will probably show something fairly generic on that live tile. Once the app gets launched, and you learn more about the user, and you learn about their preferences, at that point, you can obviously go and provide a more targeted experience on that live tile once they've launched it. So for example, for me, yeah, the basic headlines about meth crossing the US border, okay, that's interesting. Sounds bad, I should probably read that occasionally. You know, I have a daughter, I should be worried about meth. But in general, I'm more of a technology guy. Like, seriously, the thing I want on the live tile is what are the new devices that are coming out? What are the new, you know, features that are coming out in, like, in Windows 8.1, for example? As I was using my news app this morning, of course, I was browsing, and then I immediately saw an image of the 8.1 start screen, and I, you know, that drew me right in. I tapped it, and I read the article. So you can definitely target after the user's launched. But in the meantime, you can at least give them something that's generic and good. All right, now we're going to finally talk about some code that you can write. Because up until now, the only influence you've had is on how you build your app and how you package it and, you know, how you describe it to the system. But sooner or later, hopefully the user taps on your tile, and now you're actually going to have some code run. And now you have some real, real influence on what that experience is. And so what you really want is that you want from when the user launches it till they start getting feedback to be as short as possible. And this is one of the big areas that we've seen where people have just not done a great job. It seems that people haven't really focused on what do I have to do to get the app up and running quickly. And so you get, I don't know if you've had this experience, but it drives me crazy. You tap the tile, you get this splash screen, you get this little spinning donut dot thing, whatever it's called. I have no idea what we call it. But anyways, you get that, and you just sit there and stare at that for 1 second, for 2 seconds, But 3 seconds. And it just drives you crazy. You're like, all right, let's get with it. Let's get the app going. And that's really just because people aren't following best practices around the ways, the things that you can do to get your app running quickly, let the user start using it, and then fill in everything behind the scenes. There are a ton of talks on this at Build. And on my references slide on here, I will point you to all the great talks that we have that target each one of these individual items. I encourage you, they've all been recorded. You should definitely go watch them. Listen and, to what the guidance is and follow it. And the difference can be drastic. I mean, I've seen apps that were taking 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds to launch. And after some pretty small and pretty tactical changes, they were launching in like 2. The user experience between those two is night and day. And, you know, especially your first launch, you have a real opportunity to make that snappy. Because let's be clear, the first time the user launches your app, it's not customized to them yet, right? Every user is going to get pretty much the exact same experience when they launch your app for the first time. And so you should really think about what that first experience is going to be. Here's some examples of things that you shouldn't do. First and foremost, like that first experience, it should be simple. It should be straightforward. It should be, you know, if you're one of those apps that has like 500 different options and it's all over the place, like that's ugly for a whole lot of reasons. And users aren't going to consider that a beautiful, appealing experience. So keep it simple. Get your first screen up and running. Let the user do what they, you know, get going and figure out what they want to do. Explore your app a bit. In code, one thing we see a lot is that people start and there's basically almost no markup in the app. And then they have code that runs and sits there and starts pumping, XML, XAML element after XAML element or HTML element after HTML element dynamically. That takes time. One thing that can happen to people, and it's a pretty common pitfall, is you just start going and doing this. And in the meantime, the underlying system, it doesn't know when you're done. So it starts relaying out the screen. And it's doing all of this work for a layout that you don't care about, right? You're not done. You're still poking at it and trying to put all these elements into the page. And in reality, any layout that it does while you're doing that is completely wasted effort. So don't do it. Start with your markup exactly as it needs to be. Have that static markup. It'll just get parsed. It'll get laid out once. It'll get launched. The user will have that really fast experience. And after that, then you can do other things. Like, for example, let's say for this news app, you want to go and fetch tons of articles and fill it in. Well, do that after. Get the app up and running first. Give them that first experience. And then go and fetch that data later. The difference can be striking. And one of the big issues that pitfalls we run into is typically as developers, we have pretty fast networks, right? So I'm plugged in right now. I've got high bandwidth. I have even more important, I've got probably a pretty low ping, in the order of tens of millisecond ping. And so when I test my app, it seems fairly snappy. You know, maybe there's a second or two lag, but it doesn't feel too bad, so I think I'm probably done and I'm probably okay. But then I ship my app, and I start getting feedback from my users. And the users start saying that it's slow, it takes too long to launch, it's laggy. And what's probably happening is that your users don't have the great bandwidth that you do, or at least a portion of them don't. They have low bandwidth. They have longer ping times. They have 90, 100 millisecond ping times instead of your 10, 20 second ping. And so because of that, all of that network latency and all that low bandwidth is just going to hurt the experience for your app. There are some great apps in the store that I've seen that do a good job of doing this. And there's some of the news apps out there. They'll launch up and they'll show you the individual sections. And then you can actually see a progress bar that lets you know that the individual sections are loading. And you can see when some sections are done, and you can start interacting with those sections while the other ones are loading. It's a great experience. The app launches really quickly. The fact that there's stuff going on in the background, I can tell. And not only that, if I have a slow internet connection, I realize that the problem is my internet connection. It's not that the app is just poorly written. So you know, think about these kind of things. Think about how you can craft your experience so that you can get the user up and running quickly. And you don't just do the lazy thing, which a lot of, which I've even fallen into this trap. I've built apps and I thought it was pretty good. I sent it out to my family and they told me that it was slow and crappy. You know, your family loves you, but they'll still be honest with you if you're lucky. My family, we're Irish, we're extremely honest with each other, sometimes to a fault. But the feedback I got was that my app was slow and crappy, and I was like, what the hell? No, it's not, and I'm running it on my machine, it was fine. Turns out, sure enough, my app launched. I was going to the network to fetch some stuff. Not a lot, just a little bit of stuff. And yep, on my connection, it was really fast. It was taking like under a second. On some of my family's connections, it was taking 4, 5, 6 seconds, and they were getting that little stupid spinning donut. So I went off and changed my app. I made some pretty small changes to it, and all of a sudden, my very honest family told me that it was a good experience and they liked it. And so it's the kind of thing you really want to pay attention to. Another thing you want to pay attention to is suspend and resume. So the first time they launched the app, obviously, everyone's going to have pretty much the same experience. Maybe it'll be a different language, but it's, you know, it's you haven't customized the app for the user yet. But after they've used it once, hopefully, as long, you know, if you're building a good app, it's going to customize that user. Like for the news app, when I start launching it second, third, fourth, fifth time, I'm going to start to see different articles that are applicable to me, like technology versus meth, right? Not so much on the meth, a little bit more on the technology. And so you will need to also think about those experiences 2 through N. The same principles of keeping it simple still apply, but now you have the additional complexity of you need to make sure that you give the user that custom experience, but do it quickly. And the way you do that is really thinking around your suspend and resume logic. When your app is being suspended, you should save the necessary information so that you can resume very quickly. Let me give you an example. So let's just take the news app. So for this news app, I'm looking at the screen, and I see all these summaries, I see all these little images and, you know, titles and maybe a short blurb on the story. When you go and get suspended, you should keep that information around. Not tons of information, not hundreds and hundreds of megabytes of information, but enough information that if I come back to your app, I get that view very quickly. Then you can go to the network. Then you can go and update things. If you do it that way, it really feels like your app is really snappy and really really useful. I see the view that I saw before, which is unsurprising. New data comes in, which you're going to have to build that into your app anyway. And with that experience, your users are much, much more likely to pay you. And you know, as I said, this talk really is about greed. It's about getting paid for the work that you did. And the only way you're going to do that is if you give your users these great experiences. So I really wanted to leave time for question and answer, because this is one of those topics that it's like there's 100 different things you could possibly have to think about in order to do a good job. So I'll go over summary, and then we can start asking questions. Basically, every app's different, right? So I talked about the news app, which is an obvious example, but probably almost none of you are actually writing a news app. You probably have some interesting app that's targeted at a vertical you're a specialist in, or you know, you might have some great game. So each one of you will have to think through, what are the things that I need to do to get this up and running quickly and give the users that experience that feels polished, it feels professional? Because, again, think about it. You spend all that time on your app. You put in all those features. You fix all those bugs, right? We all write lots of bugs, unfortunately. You fix all the bugs. You feel really great about it. If you overlook this one seemingly small area, you can lose the user. You can go from having, you know, hundreds of thousands of users to thousands. Because the first people that use it, by the way, users form their opinion of your app in the first experience. And we see that most users rate the app after they've used it once or twice. It's not like the users are like, hey, I need to be fair and impartial. Let me use it for a week, see if it's really good, and then I'll decide if it's 4 or 5 star, 3 star. We've all read these reviews. Ah, the app was slow, 1 star. Oh, it crashed on me once, 1 star. Like, users give those snap judgments. And so you're not going to have enough time for a user to experience all of those great features before they finally decide that you're worth 5 stars. They're going to form that opinion early. And if you want to be a successful app, you're going to have to spend at least part of your effort, part of your energy, part of your dev time working on making sure that they have that great zippy experience and they're going to give you that 5-star. So you really want to think about that. So to recap, download time. Again, a lot of the first experience, your code isn't running. It's sad to say, but it's true. Your code's literally not running. But luckily, in 8.1, we've given you a lot of ways that you can now participate and tune your app so that you have a great experience even before your code starts running. And think about that first launch time and subsequent launches and make sure that they're fast and make sure that the user gets that visual feedback. And it's not, by the way, I just want to say one more time, that little donut thing, that's not visual feedback. All that tells the user is that your app isn't hung yet. That's all it tells them. Yep, things are still moving along, things are still moving along. If they end up staring at that for too long, they may not even wait for your app to launch. If you have a 9-second launch time, which isn't uncommon, unfortunately, for some apps, you may not even get the user to ever see any of the work that you did. They will see a spinning donut app, they will switch away, they will give you 1 star, and you're done. So make sure you think through it. Here are some great resources that you should go and watch. These have all been recorded and will be up. If they're not already up on the website, they'll be up there soon. So go watch these and kind of dive deeper into some of the different talks that we have. And they should really help you with that. And then obviously evaluate this session, I guess. I didn't know this slide was there. I guess scan your QR code and rate the session. Questions? Actually, I'll leave this up there.